about to equal what the great Wizard of Westwood did at UCLA in men's college basketball. UConn has done it again for the 10th time. They are the champions.
We are witnessing coaching greatness. There is no question. Yes, he gets great players, but he's not afraid to coach them hard and get them to exceed even their own expectations.
Hello and welcome to Hot Takedown, an emergency Hot Takedown podcast, because the UConn Huskies are the national champions in the women's game yet again. I'm Chadwick Matlin, editor at 538. Across from me in the studio is Allison McCann. Hi, Allison.
Hey, Chad.
Allison is one of our visual journalists, and in a cab speeding from JFK to some undisclosed location is Kate Fagan, a columnist for ESPNW. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Chad. Hi, Allison.
So both Allison and Kate are back just now from the Women's Championship game in Tampa. And, Kate, what was it like in Tampa? What was the feel on the stadium?
The stadium was awesome. It was a great environment. This is my fourth in a row, so I'm one ahead of UConn in attending Final Fours, not in winning them. And this one had way more fans, actually, than the previous ones. Like, Denver was real struggle in selling tickets, even though, you know, a lot of them are like, it's like a conference. So this place was jammed, and the energy was awesome. And, you know, because we own the rights to it, I was sitting courtside, and I actually didn't think UConn played great. And I didn't even think Notre Dame played great. I thought UConn really struggled. Turnovers early, they weren't shooting, they made a lot of mistakes. I was sitting really close to Gino, and he was, as always, really engaged with the refs early in the game. There were a couple, like, travel calls in a row that he disagreed with, and he, like, turned to everyone on press row and at the scorer's table and was like, this woman ref thinks we're here to see her. So I think he was kind of agitated early with his team and with everything. But then as you saw late, even though they're, like, Kalina Mosqueda-Lewis didn't play well in the semifinal game and wasn't playing well, down the stretch she hit so many big shots, like a key three where Notre Dame, I think, was within six, and she hits a big three. And at that moment, you just knew that UConn, even though you kind of going in, you were like, it's going to take a miracle to win. Notre Dame was hanging around. And then UConn just hit those crucial threes at various moments in the second half, and I thought that was obviously the difference.
Yeah, when I was watching the game, it seemed like the impossible might actually happen. And then with two drives down the court, it was an 11-point game instead of a 6-point game. Allison, did it feel like that was the dagger that felt like with me watching at home when you were there in the stadium?
Yeah, well, you know, we sort of had our recap ready to go for the end of the game, you know, heavily in the UConn favor. And at halftime, my editor Simone and I were saying, like, well, maybe we should start to draft the Notre Dame lead, because they were only up by 8 at the half, which for UConn is, you know, terrible. Their regular season average was up by 25 points at halftime, and in the tournament, 18 points. So an 8-point lead was, you know, something scary that we hadn't seen from a UConn team. And Notre Dame was even out-rebounding them offensively and defensively. So it was looking to be like a much closer game than I think most of us had anticipated.
And the Notre Dame-UConn rivalry, as our colleague Carl Bialik wrote earlier in the week, is the best rivalry in college women's basketball, because the margin of victory in those games compared to the margin of victory in UConn's games against everyone else is much tighter. It's 8 points against Notre Dame since 2007, whereas versus someone like Maryland, which UConn beat in the Final Four, it's 20 points, and that's the next closest for UConn. And so this was really the all-star matchup that women's basketball could have hoped for. Kate, do you feel like the sport put forward the narratives that you've been talking about, that we've been talking about on Hot Takedown the last few weeks, where we've tried to figure out how to get more attention to the game? Is this the kind of game that does that?
I thought this was the best final, honestly, that women's basketball could have hoped for. I was talking to a few people in the arena like an hour before tip-off, whether like ESPN sort of officials who have a stake in how the game plays on TV, as well as NCAA officials, and like everybody just kept saying, Notre Dame, just give us 25 minutes. Just give us 25 minutes of good basketball. They were all really worried that it was going to turn into the UConn-Louisville final from 2 years ago, where UConn ended up winning by 31 and they were up 20 at the half, possibly even a little bit more. And so I think what Notre Dame has going for it and has had for the last 3 or 4 years is they do not buy into the UConn swagger and the sort of bowing to UConn before they even get on the floor. I mean, I think I read a stat that over the last, I think it's 4 years, Notre Dame's beaten UConn 7 times because they used to play in the Big East together. And like,
which is the most, right?
Right, and the rest of the NCAA field has only beaten them 6 times.
Yeah.
So this game was the best they could hope for in terms of the matchup going in. Although Notre Dame had 13 turnovers in the first half and some of the basketball was not as crisp as you like, at least it was not a game that where the outcome was determined until probably the last like 4 or 5 minutes is when you were 100% sure you saw UConn pulling this out.
Kate, I have a question for you. In that first half when Breonna Stewart kind of took a spill, and for a minute I thought it was going to be something worse there. And how much do you think this game would have changed without her? I mean, for me, she was the player that changed the game for UConn in the second half. She had 15 rebounds in the game. And anyway, I wonder if this game would have looked entirely different had she gone out there in the beginning with that injury.
I think it would have looked very different. I do think UConn still would have won because of some uncanny ability that Geno and that team has to have player after player sort of in line to do things when other players either graduate or get hurt. I mean, we didn't even see Stewie really look as good as she has looked, certainly in previous title games and previous games throughout her career. You know, she had 25 in the semifinal, and I think she only had like 8 points last night, although she was her arm length, her wingspan on rebounds and on deflecting shots and on blocking shots. I mean, her arms are so long. So I think you're right. She did have 15 rebounds. I really was never concerned that she wasn't going to come back. You kind of see, like, right when she went off the floor, when she walked by us, she was grimacing, but she was, like, putting full weight on that foot. And then they took her to the end of the bench. And, I'm assuming that trainer, as Stewie said in the postgame afterward, like, wrapped it as tight as she possibly could so that Stewie could almost, like, not feel the injury. But I think we would have seen the color and the dynamic of the game change, but I still am convinced UConn would win that game.
So let's move into talking more about UConn's legacy. And before we do, I want to correct myself with something I just said, which is that the margin of victory between UConn and Notre Dame is the closest of UConn versus all others. But it's Stanford that's next at 9.1 points in the margin of victory. And UConn, of course, lost to Stanford earlier this season for their only loss of the season. So
go Cardinal.
UConn's third straight championship. All right, Allison, I forgot.
That's right.
And so UConn third straight championship. Our colleague Ben Morris has done some work, and Allison, you helped him with the data end of this and visualizing it, about just how great the last 3 years of UConn is. And the thing that stuck out to me about this year's team is that every trip up and down the floor, on average, UConn gains 0.58 points, which is to say that they're scoring – you know, let's say an opponent misses and UConn scores, that's 2 points in the net margin, right? But every trip up and down on average is 0.58, and that's why they can blow people out so well this season. And the thing is that this year's team is the best of the last three in points on offense versus points on defense, but all other teams in women's college basketball regress to the mean. They have a good year, let's say, 3 years ago, but they can't keep it up, and so they come back to the center of gravity. But UConn has just been like a shooting star further and further away from that mass. And I wonder, Allison, as you've watched them over the past 3 years, you know, what's stuck out to you about their ability to sort of keep it going? Because that seems pretty rare to me.
Yeah, that chart we made for that is insane. I think Ben Morris and I called it, like, the clusterfuck of can I say fuck?
Yeah, we haven't done it before, but Allison, breaking barriers.
The clusterfuck of mediocrity in the middle. Like every team, like you said, is just this hairball of regressing to the mean. Besides UConn, who is just off to the farthest right in points scored per possession and points allowed. I don't know. Yeah, it's like they don't even belong in the same category as other schools. It just blows my mind.
Yeah, Kate, how are they doing this? You know, like, is it about recruiting? Is it about execution? Is it about Auriemma, as the sort of instant reactions and instant takes seem to be today?
It's really mind-boggling because when I was playing in college, like early 2000s, it wasn't like UConn wasn't good. Obviously, they were still winning titles. I mean, I remember 2002, they had Sue Bird, Asia Jones, Swin Cash, Tamika Williams, they had this insane class, and they won the title that year, but they ended up winning it by like 10 points. And a lot of people thought, like, this is as good as it can get for UConn. Like, they're beating teams by double digits in the championship game, and they've got these fabulous recruiting classes. But still at that time, in the late 90s, early 2000s, the Stanford program was getting, like, a fair share of, like, the top 10 players. Same with Tennessee before Pat Summitt's diagnosis. And so you saw really good players go to UConn, but it wasn't stockpiled and layered the way it has become now. And so I think that's obviously that's a key part, is, like, they're getting players that aren't just, like, you know, third-team high school All-Americans, but they're getting the first team. And on top of that, from having done a lot of, like, stories and reporting and talking to UConn players, there's something very different about the way they police themselves internally. They're policed by, like, Sue Bird polices the freshman that comes onto the team. Then when the freshman becomes a senior, she's policing the next player, and the expectations end up being almost higher than any coaching staff can ever set. And, like, I do think that's really important, because there's no sort of, like, eye-rolling or frustration among these players because it's, like, an authority thing. It's more of, like, a shoulder-to-shoulder. I think that plays a huge part. Again, like, I look at those charts that Allison helped create, and, of course, it visually represents what you see on the court, that there's something about each time they're on defense and each time they're on offense where they're just separating themselves. And the best you can say is that it's talent mixed with hard work. And I know that sounds trite, but I think that's just what it comes down to.
Yeah, I think their consistency to me is the most remarkable, too. Not only do they continue to get better, but they are consistently better on offense and defense. You know, there is no dip in their seasons the past few years, and I think that's as remarkable as how strong they are, but they continue to be, like, as strong as they should be. You know, like, they could still get a little bit worse and they would still be better than everyone else, but we don't see that happening either.
Yeah, and you can see these charts that we're talking about on 538.com for those who are interested, and we'll try and figure out if we can put it alongside this podcast. But there was another chart in there about the consistency, as you were saying, Allison, of UConn the past 3 years. And if you look at the just straight the number of points scored versus the number of points allowed, and again, this is from Ben Morris's piece, the lines don't change trajectory almost at all. Like, the last 3 years of Huskies have scored and allowed almost the exact same number of points, much in favor of the Huskies each year, every year. So there's clearly something larger than just the players going on here. I mean, a lot of the players have stuck around, Brown Stewart included, for the last 3 years. But I wondered, and I want to shift it now into Auriemma. Almost immediately after that game was over, I felt like the narrative was entirely about whether Gino Auriemma was John Wooden of women's college basketball, or if we should even distinguish that, whether Auriemma is just as good or better than John Wooden. I wonder what you guys' thoughts were on that.
For me, it was frustrating after the men's final on Tuesday, after Duke won, to hear all these people saying that following Wooden is Coach K as the winningest, most impressive college basketball coach. And, of course, we hadn't seen the women's game be played yet. But I think that it just really discredits everything that Gino has done for that program. You know, maybe he doesn't have 7 in a row like Wooden. It seemed like people were using that as something. But he's been to 10 national championships, and he's won all of them. Like, he's perfect in the finals. And to me, that's even more impressive.
Yeah, I wrote about this last night after the game. I wrote about Gino's 10 titles, and can we compare them to John Wooden? Because a lot of people want to say that somehow it's easier to win in women's college basketball. Like, the analogy I used in the piece was, like, somehow men's basketball is like a full-size track and women's is like an indoor shorter track. Therefore, like, one completion is not equivalent. And, you know, we've talked about this on earlier Hot Takedowns about how the point that women's basketball is in right now, the era it's in, is actually almost identical to the era that John Wooden coached in. And when I did research, it's actually almost identical to the era with the New York Yankees, where they won 4 World Series titles in a row, which was about 33 years after the first World Series.
And Kate, so when you say identical, you mean as far as the quality of the competition? What does identical mean there? What metric are you using?
I mean, the point in time we are in women's basketball. So the first AIAW championship game was 1972. The first men's NCAA championship game was 1939. So in terms of the space we are in the evolution of the game, you know, how old the game is, mm-hmm. Geno's coaching at the same moment in time that John Wooden coached. And we've seen, if you look across sports, you see dynasties that kind of emerge as sports move mature, sort of like from youngster to adulthood. You see these dynasties emerge, and that's where Geno is right now and where UConn is. And like last night, even talking to him, I asked him specifically to compare him, the eras he's coaching in, to John Wooden. And he was down with that question because he hates when we compare women's basketball to men's basketball. Because as he said, when he coaches the Olympic team, he's walking around with Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird and Candace Parker. And because they're walking next to LeBron James and Kobe Bryant, it's like those women don't even matter. So if you're always going to make that comparison, as he said, you're never going to give anybody credit. He was even, since we can swear now, he was even like, the NFL is the shit. So Bill Belichick is the best coach in the NFL. And by that standard, no other coach in America is important, just Bill Belichick, if we're going to constantly make comparisons. So he doesn't want his teams compared, but he is down for the era comparison. And he said that he feels like his UConn team, when history judges them, this team will have pulled and evolved women's basketball forward. And he knows history's coming for him, too. He knows these things don't last. And he knows in 10 years, probably, or less, he's not going to be winning these kinds of titles. There'll be another program that emerges. So he has a really good viewpoint about comparisons and era comparisons and where he wants this UConn team placed in historical context.
Yeah, and I'll just go back quickly to Ben Morris's piece. If you haven't read it, you should definitely go to our site and check it out. But he got a lot of pushback from that article about this same idea that women's college basketball isn't deep, you know. And so he started looking at participation rates in high school players for men's and women, and he's found that they're similar, that scholarship rates in college are similar. So I think he's going to have a piece coming in the next couple weeks that sort of is going to dispel this notion that the field isn't as deep. So definitely come back and check that out on 538.
So one last quick question, and then we have to run in a couple minutes here. Kate, you brought up this idea that UConn's run may not last forever, but in the immediate future, next year, is there any reason to think they are not going to run away with it all over again?
No. I'll be interested to see what the 538 model is when next year's tourney starts, if it's higher than 74%, but I imagine it will be. I think that there are a couple programs, you know, in having learned, at least in terms of what made Kentucky only a 41%, it's like the strength of other programs. There are a few other programs right now, Notre Dame being one of them, who have, you know, Lindsey Allen, who's only a sophomore. Their center is only a freshman. Maryland has three great sophomores. I think both those programs could vie for the 2017 NCAA title. But in terms of next year, having Stewie as a senior and Mariah Jefferson as a senior, I think that model, that 538 model, will be over 80% for them.
Great. And so I think we'll leave it there, and we'll be back probably before next year to talk about UConn and other college basketball. Kate, thanks for joining us from a speeding cab.
Thank you.
Allison, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks, you guys, for listening. Our producer is Jody Avergan. Our theme is by Mystery Mansion. You can find us on Stitcher, Downcasts, and iTunes, where we're at itunes.com/538. Please, if this is the first time that you're finding Hot Takedown, because this is an emergency pod, you come in an emergency trying to get some more insight on the women's final, please subscribe to Hot Takedown. We, every week, put out sort of a podcast about the sports narratives of the week and the data that may or may not back them up. Again, I'm Chadwick Matlin. Thanks again for listening.